And we are in week 5 of our series on the book of James. And the book of James is a book in the Bible. It's in the New Testament scriptures. It's one of the letters that one of the leaders, James, wrote to the early church. He was an early church leader. And we've called it Faith Works. And we've called it Faith Works because the book of James is really, it's written to Christians about having a practical faith. Not like a faith that's like in the clouds that, oh, I just believe stuff and then I just like go about my life. My life doesn't reflect that. But it's about our faith being expressed in our work, in our lives, in our homes, in our schools, in all aspects of our lives. And so we've been looking over the last 5 weeks through themes in the book of James. There's only just 5 chapters in this book. And we've looked at what does faith look like through trials and troubles? What does faith look like? How does it work in listening? How do we listen and how we treat others? And last week, we looked at our words. And I don't know, I was reflecting on that this week and there were, you know, the kind of saying that we said is, you know, if you can't build up, then what do you need to do? Shut up. Okay, yeah. This week, there was a bunch of that happened. I don't know if you can relate. So, but along those lines, like James gives us some really, really good advice here. Not just advice, but kind of a recipe for how we're to live, how we're to treat others, what are we supposed to do with the things that God has given us. And so today we're going to look at the question of how does faith work through conflict? Through conflict. Do everybody give me a good shudder? I don't like conflict. Are you a fight person or a flight person when it comes to conflict? So when you're facing conflict, who's the fight person? Just like give it up. Like anybody? Okay, there's a couple of people. What about the flight? Just get me out of here. I'm running away, right? Like we all have our reactions to conflict, at least our gut reactions. And if you've been in a conflict recently, you know this, that every single one of us has been in conflict. It's true. Every single one of us. There's not a person in this room or online who has not experienced conflict. To be human is to be in conflict. And so James has a word for us today, and I think God does too through his words. That it's interesting. In each of these messages and parts of the book of James that we've been reading and going through, it's really meant to open up 2 things for us as we read the scriptures, you listen to the word. First, it's opened up an inventory for us. And it's also an invitation. So meaning that an inventory, that when you hear the word of God proclaimed, and when I'm kind of preaching up here, or whoever is kind of sharing the word, is that we take an inventory. That you allow and you ask God, you ask the Holy Spirit, to look inside you, to say, what is that saying to me? Like to take an inventory. Is there something that needs to change in my heart? In my life? And if so, to open yourself up to that, to take inventory. But then the second thing is that it brings to mind an invitation. Meaning, in what way is God calling me to go? Like, to take a practical step. Like, not just to think about it or to pray about it or dream about it and kind of let it go. But what is an invitation that God is inviting me? What is a step for that to happen? And so in James chapter 4, which we're going to look at today, there's lots of both of these. So as we're listening, as we're going along today, I want you to be thinking and praying about that. The inventory, like what is God saying to me through this? And then the invitation, what is God calling me to do about it or a step to take? And so in James chapter 4, admittedly, one could preach 15 sermons from this chapter, okay? Today we're only going to preach 4. Just kidding. We're just going to preach 1, okay? Everybody was like, what? We're going to be here for 10 hours. So, okay, so ready, buckle up. We're going to read this whole first section here from James chapter 4, 1 through 10. So James starts, he says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you don't receive because you ask with the wrong motives that you might spend what you get on your pleasures. You adulterous people, isn't he nice there? Don't you know that friendship with the world means enmity against God? Therefore, anyone who chooses to be a friend of the world becomes an enemy of God. Ooh, a little harsh. Or do you think that scripture says without reason that he jealously longs for the spirit he has caused to dwell in us? But he gives us more grace. That's why scripture says God opposes the proud but shows favor to the humble. Submit yourselves, then, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Come near to God, and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Grieve, mourn, and wail. Change your laughter to mourning and your joy to gloom. Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up. Okay, so we're going to unpack that today. We're going to like dive into this. But when it comes to conflict, to live in this world as a human being means that from time to time that we're going to face conflict, right? I mean, I want you to think just for a second, just this past week, or maybe 2 weeks, or the past month, have you been in conflict with someone? Has there been a conflict? Does anything like come to mind here? And if so, did things get rather heated? Yeah, okay. Did you say some things, or maybe the other person or party said some things that maybe you would regret? Yes. Did it escalate maybe beyond what was going on at the time or even what it was about? And maybe at this point you don't even know what it was about, right? Like, doesn't that happen? I mean, if you find yourself in a moment like that, you're in good company. And I realized that this past week, even as I was like driving to Maryland, right? Like the traffic, man, like, you know, I wish I could like drive around all that, right? I don't miss I-95 at all along that way. You know, the things that you know, in different arguments or different conversations with people that I've found myself in, and I'm like, you know, once again, going back to my words, do I need to just shut up right here and now, or do I need to say something, right? Just all those things. And as I was even just going along the week, I'm realizing, like, of course, I'm preaching on that this Sunday. And I find myself in that way. But James's message of conflict is for our personal lives, but I also have to think it's also for the congregation he's speaking to, for the Christians he's speaking to. And I think you and I can relate that even at this moment in history, we see the world just tearing itself apart. There's so much fractures and division and people not talking to one another. I think we need a word from God on what it means to navigate conflict in our lives. And it's a call to do two things. To normalize it, like we said, we all encounter conflict, but then to navigate through it. So we see at the beginning here, as James opens chapter 4, he poses a very simple question. What does he say? He says, "What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you?" Good question. Just think, when have you used the word quarrel? Have you used the word quarrel anytime recently? Anybody? It's not a word we usually use a lot. So I just want to ask for a second, well, what kind of conflict is he talking about here? Because there are different types of conflict. A quarrel. Well, did you know a quarrel is defined as a heated argument about a trivial issue between two people who are usually on good terms? So it's a heated argument about a trivial issue, usually between two people who are usually on good terms. Have you experienced that? Yeah, I experienced it. Be of good cheer. In the Bible, there are quarrels throughout it. I mean, isn't it true? Like, we tend to look at the early church, those of us who have been in church a long time, does like Bible studies and all. We look back on the early church a lot of times and we think about how awesome it must have been back then, how great, like, you know, the people that just like had gotten to meet Jesus and everybody was kumbayaing together and just singing together and all how great it was. There was holiness and miracles and the apostles. But you know what, friends? Most of the New Testament shows us it was not awesome. In fact, most of the New Testament letters were written to groups of people in the church who were messed up and quarreling and not getting along and fighting and taking other people's communions and, like, you know, all that kind of crazy stuff. Which tells us this, that people back then were as difficult and thorny as they are today. Some things don't change, right? And that's the reality, that's a part of the human story. But the question becomes why? Why? That's what James is diving into here. The question becomes why? And James decides to focus on two reasons. There's multiple reasons. But he focuses on two reasons. And they're not the only ones, but the ones that he focuses on here to pay attention to. And the first answer to his question, why on the quarrels, is our self-centered desires. Self-centered desires. He says in verse 1, don't they come from the desires that battle within you? Kind of a rhetorical question. Like, don't they come from the desires that battle within us? Meaning that he's saying conflicts you have with others are deeply rooted in the conflict you have with yourself. It's true. You know, don't we usually say, like, there's something bad happening, right? You're in a quarrel with someone. Like, you say, well, what's the problem? Somebody comes in like, well, what's the problem going on here? And then what do we usually say? It's them, right? It's them. Now turn to your neighbor, and I want you to tell your neighbor, you're the problem. Ready? Go ahead. Tell them you're the problem. So didn't that feel good, right? You're like, oh, that just made, like, cathartic right here. You're the problem. But see, James is like, that's not the case, though. You need to start in here. Whoa, James is saying here, you know what? If you had more peace with yourself, the chances are you'd have more peace with the people around you. Ooh, say ooh, ooh. Like, he's saying, if you had more peace with yourself, you'd probably have more peace with the people around you. Your outward conflict is often a sign of the inward conflict. See, but what desires is he talking about? Well, he's talking about things that he describes here to be right. I want to be right. I want to be right, prove myself, right? I want to be seen. I want to be praised by the masses and the crowds. I want to be powerful. I want to be influential. And when we're so focused on ourselves and what we want, that's what creates the quarrels. And sociologists, they say that basically those kinds of focuses, it leads to what's called a zero-sum game, meaning that in order for me to win, you have to lose. And that's what we get ourselves into. That's how politics operate. That's how we get infected with the spirit of the culture around us when it's this constant battle with one another. And so if we want to just decrease conflict or at least eliminate unnecessary ones, it requires us to recognize that we don't always see straight. I don't always see straight. You don't always see straight. And you think about that. Like, has there ever been a time in your life that your desire to be right, your desire to have the last word, caused great strife? Cause great division? See, James is saying conflicts happen because we don't have the capacity to enter the world of another person. We don't feel what they feel or see what they might be seeing. And that multiplies conflicts. It makes matters worse, our desires. You know, what one for me is sometimes when I'm talking to a friend or a family member and we're talking about something like in the past, I don't know if this ever happened to you, but somebody's like, you know what, when was the last time like we went to the beach and visited and stuff? And you're like, oh, okay, well, that specific beach, that was back in, you know, 2005, I think it was, and so-and-so was there. And then what does the other person say? No, that was 2006. And you're like, nope. That was 2005, and so-and-so was there. And like, nope, that was 2006. So what do? You go back, and you're like asking people, and you're like, no, that was, she was there, and I'm going to find out, and I'm going to prove to you it's 2005. And they're like, I'm going to prove to you it was 6, right? And you get into it, and you go there, and it kind of multiplies. And then pretty soon, you're mad at the other person because they said 6, and you said 5, and then so-and-so was there, and they really weren't there, and it's just like all messed up. And you're like, it messes it up. It's that self-centered desire to be right. But James lets us know that that's the source. He lets us know that conflicts from how we have organized our lives and our feelings and things about us and getting what we want. And that's the first problem that James names. What is causing your conflicts and quarrels? Well, your self-centered desires are the cause of it. And then James adds something to this, which is kind of a natural extension of that, is self-centered jealousy. Self-centered jealousy. He says in verse 2, he said, you desire, but do not have, so you kill. That's a little strong there, right? You covet, but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have, because you do not ask God. So conflicts happen often because of jealousy, envy, coveting. Well, that makes us ask the question, what is coveting? What is coveting? Well, coveting, definition, is dissatisfaction in an area of life due to comparison. It's dissatisfaction in an area of life due to comparison. That if we live in a state of dissatisfaction in an area of life with ourselves, potential is we will turn that outwardly. If you're dissatisfied with something in your life, eventually you will turn that outwardly. Some examples, that if you're dissatisfied with the amount of control you have in your life, you don't have control over things, or the amount of power or authority that you have, then you will turn it outward by using people for your own purposes, or being a bully. That often comes out. If you are dissatisfied with what you have, with that might be physical things or status in life or a family, whatever it is, then often you live at a breakneck pace that causes more anxiety, trying to achieve, to keep busy, to do. If you're dissatisfied with who you are, you don't really like who you are, then you tend to tear other people down instead of build them up. That's what happens. You know, and you hear this, right? You hear in the news stories of someone who is so jealous of someone in a relationship that they wind up killing them. So this pastor is hoping that you never do that. But don't we often turn outward and we kill people with our words because we're dissatisfied with something inside of us? You know, take some time sometime to examine maybe a situation that is something that you said that you now regret and look back and say, why did I say that? Where did that come from? And most often, it'll come from out of one of those places. So think about that. What degree is coveting impacting your life? Is coveting? And see, in the Bible, we see the idea of coveting filling the pages of the Bible. The 10th commandment, you know, God's top 10 list of like the thou shall and thou shall not, is thou shall not covet. But what's interesting is that in the Bible, did you know that the very first mention of sin in the Bible is not in the Garden of Eden? It's not. It actually shows up, the first mention of sin shows up after in the story of Cain and Abel. The time when Cain is jealous and envious and covetous of his brother Abel. And the scripture says, sin is crouching at your door. That's what God is saying. Sin is crouching at your door. That's the first time. So we have to pay attention to that. To admit jealousy, though, is something we often have a hard time with, right? It feels beneath our dignity to name it. It feels too petty or pervasive and destructive. But what jealousy does is it reveals the idols of our hearts, the things that are most important to us. You know, for example, for me, so we'll use me personally. If I see a musician, like we have great musicians up here, great worship team. You know, if I even like go to a concert or I see someone playing at a restaurant or that kind of thing, I see someone who is just gifted and talented in that way, I can totally celebrate that. You know why? I'm not a musician. I appreciate musicians. I appreciate music. I can celebrate that. But you know what? If I'm at a 5K, I go up to the race starting line, and I see a girl who really looks fast and fit. You know what? That's my thing. I'm like, okay, what's she gonna do? Am I gonna be able to beat her? Like, is this gonna be good? Like, that's like, I'm a runner. That's my area. That's my thing. I'm gonna compare. I'm gonna be like, maybe what's she training? Who is she leading? What's going on there? That's my area. That's the thing that's important to me. It's the area where we're most preoccupied is what we feel most threatened by. Think about that. Think about what are those things in your life that you're covetous in? Well, those are the things that like are most important to you or that you're jealous. Okay, that person won and I didn't. Or maybe it's in your work. That person got promoted and I didn't. Or maybe it's a family situation. A family looks a certain, well, I don't have that. And that, you know, and you just think about, you ruminate over it. Those are the things that are most important to it. So pay attention. And James is not saying here, he's not saying don't admire someone. He's not saying don't admire. That you can admire another couple's or family's love. You can say, I want my marriage to look like that. You know, I want my relationships with my kids to look like that. I admire that. Or that you're single and you want to meet Mr. or Mrs. Right without being jealous. You can do that without being jealous. You can say, hey, that's what I really want in a partner. See, God isn't against you having desires. But when life is oriented around your dissatisfaction, you mess things up. See, James says that's where conflict comes from. It's the desires within us, the things that arise out of us, and then that jealousy of wanting to one-up someone else. God's not against us having desires, but conflicts arise because of those two things, so pay attention to them. But then comes the question, though, what he gets to next. It's not just what's the cause, but how do we limit the unnecessary conflicts in our lives? How do we limit them? And he gives a laundry list of ways, but he focuses mainly on three invitations here that I want to look at. Three invitations. The first is to walk in the pathway of humility. Walk in the pathway of humility. He says in verse 6, but he, the Lord, gives us more grace. That's why Scripture says God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. See, we have to define humility correctly. Humility is not thinking less about yourself, but thinking about yourself less. It's a book, the famous Rick Warren book, Purpose Driven Life, says that this in the very first page, says it's not about you. Some of us have to absorb that. Like, it's not about us, about how we orient the world around us. Is that we're called to orient our world and our goals around God and around love of our neighbor. And that's so hard, isn't it? It's so hard because everything around us is telling us and everything inside of us is telling us it should be about me. It should be about me and me getting it and me. I mean, it's just like, you know, if you ever take a group photo with someone, ever take like a group photo, you know, we were in a group, you're like, we went out to lunch, and we saw each other, or like this week with the pastors, we took this big group photo of like 90 of us there. And you know, you take multiple pictures, you know, you can do that on your phone, believe it or not. You don't have to like go develop them and then discard them. Remember those days, by the way, people like had like film and you'd like send it away or like take it and then you'd be like, I hope things come out, right? Now it's like delete, 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 right? But you look at them, you look at the multiple pictures that you took, maybe you took 15 of them, I don't know. And then if you're the photographer or if it's your phone, what do you do? If you look good in the picture, do you like the picture? Yes, you do. You like the picture. Who do you look at in the picture, in the group picture? I look at me. I don't care that her eyes are closed or his mouth is open or whatever. I look at me. And if not, if I'm the one with my mouth open or eyes closed, I hit delete, right? But if it's me, if I'm the one who looks good, I like it. And then I frame it, right? And I post it and I share it. And then like he's sitting on the side like this, right? And I'm like looking all good and fancy, right? We're self-referential. It's all about us. That's our tendency. That's inside of us. Or it's just like the story of a pastor who was leaving his church. He had resigned, was leaving his church, and in his last service, a woman was crying and wailing, and he came up to him and gave him a hug, and the man said, the pastor said, oh, well, you know what, honey? He said, I will pray, you know, that the next pastor will be so much better than me. And she said, oh, that's why I'm crying, because that's what the last three said. Right? We think it's about us. We're like, oh no, I'm so great. Like, oh people, I'm the God's gift here. Like some of us need a little dose of humility. Not to think less about ourselves, but to think about ourselves less. And that's why like serving other people is a big part, friends. If you're not active serving other people, I'm talking like outside your family, like people that otherwise you would not be around, or like serving other people, getting outside yourself. It's amazing what happens and the humility that often arises in you when you're like cleaning a floor, doing something that seems to be beneath you to help others. You know, that's why it's so important to recognize too that we have blind spots. See, when conflicts emerge, James is saying one of the ways to quench unnecessary quarrels is to humble ourselves, to say, you know what, it's not all about me. But then he gets in the second way here. So to walk in the pathway of humility, second way, he says, submit to God and resist the devil. Submit to God and resist the devil. He says, submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil, he'll flee from you. Come near to God, he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. I mean, submit means to arrange yourself under. It's a way of saying, like, you know, you ever, like, see these signs up on the road? Like, you know, what do you, by the way, this is just, like, driver's ed here, right? Like, what do you do at a yield? Like, do you go, okay, choice A, I go up and I keep going, right? Right, okay, choice B, I stop and I wait for the sign to change green, right? No. Don't do that, right? It's not a stop. Like, what do you do in a yield sign, right? You go up and you look and you wait if you need to, but then you merge in. And I think that similarly, that's what James is saying here, is that you arrange yourself under, you yield to the movement of God. Is that asking the question, what does God want here? How would God want me to act or respond or receive? Like, to resist that, to resist the urge just to go, 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 or to stop, 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 but to pay attention, to submit or arrange ourselves under the Lord. But then the second piece is to resist the devil. So what does that mean? Does that mean just pray more against Satan? Well, what James is saying, he's getting at what Paul talks about in Ephesians 6, where he says, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but powers and principalities. Friends, there is always something going on beyond what we can see, beyond what we can describe. The real fight is not between us. It's not between flesh and flesh. There is a real battle between powers of evil that desire division and disruption. And that's why, like, you know, maybe you believe in a real figure, a real personable Satan, the person of evil. You know, maybe you're like, I'm not sure about that. I tend to believe in that. But I believe the evil one wants to convince us that the real problem is the person across from us. That's his desire. It's the person. It's not like any, like, they're what's wrong, right? It's them. It's them. But I think the most important thing is to recognize, no, there is evil that person might be submitting to wherever, but the enemy is not the other person. To agree with the other person that neither of us are an enemy. We're not enemies. We're trying to figure this out. That's what we're doing. It doesn't make the other person evil. It doesn't make the other person, hey, corrupt. It doesn't make that person that way. But we can say, hey, I acknowledge you're trying to figure this out and not allow it to escalate. See, the devil loves escalation. The devil loves amplification. The devil loves it when you can just sit back and watch people in conflict. See, and it's amazing here, right? James is not talking to the people of the world. He's talking to Christians. He's talking to people who are following Jesus and the way of Jesus. And that brings to mind and reminds us that we too can still partner with the devil. We can partner with evil. And it doesn't mean that we're playing the Ouija board or like dressing like death or whatever it is. Like, we're saying that we still have the capacity so to watch that, to realize that the other person in flesh is not the enemy. And that's why he says this in verses 11 and 12. He says, brothers and sisters, do not slander one another. Anyone who speaks against a brother or sister judges them, speaks against the law and judges it. And when you judge the law, you're not keeping it, but you're sitting in judgment on it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But you, who are you? I like what he said. Who are you to judge your neighbor? Who am I to judge my neighbor? He's saying here, partnering with evil, with the devil, is things like slander and dishonoring and putting yourself as a judge. I mean, that's sinful stuff. I mean, most of the time we can't even remember, like years later, even weeks later, of what the conflict that we had was even about, but now we still hate the other person, right? That's got to change. He's saying not to focus on that, to recognize, to submit to God, to yield to what God would want and resist the devil. But then the last thing, which is a great reminder for all of us, and we'll end here, is to keep things in perspective. Keep things in perspective. And he goes on, in verse 13, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why? You don't even know what will happen tomorrow. Isn't that true? What is your life? You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if this is the Lord's will, live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it's sin for them. So keep things in perspective. Meaning in the big thing is the scheme of things, right? The quarrels, the things that you have with the person that usually you're on good terms with. In the big scheme of things, does it really matter? Does this really matter? Because you know what James calls you and I? He calls us a mist, a mist. The thing that came to mind is here, when you're waiting in line at Hershey Park forever and it's hot outside, and what do they send on you in the waiting line? The mist. The mist coming off. Or hey, you go outside and it's a foggy day and you're going for a walk, and what hits you in the face is a mist. It's like here one second and it's gone the next. Isn't that true? That's our lives. I mean, that's why when tragedy strikes or there's a sudden loss in your family or in your relationships, it shakes us so much. He's reminding us, hey, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. So don't get caught up in that thing today. Don't lose sight of it. Don't waste this short life and the little relationships that you have based on that. Keep things in perspective. And so here's God's promise for us today, friends, in chapter 4, that if we humble ourselves, he'll lift us up. If you humble yourself, that's what James says, he will lift you up, meaning that conflict's going to happen, but it can be limited. It can be limited. You can limit it, examining yourself in those things, acting out of humility. You know, submitting to God, saying, what was the godly thing to do? Resisting the temptation to look at the person as the enemy rather than the real enemy. And keeping things in perspective. See, James is pointing us in another, a different way, friends. A different way than the world around us points us. And I think what the world around us is longing for is the very model of another way. What can be done. And I believe this. Listen to this. I believe that you can be a model for that. You can be a model for that in your life, in the people you know. Even if you're like, hey, well, I'm the only one, and you can be a model for that. And I believe our church can also be a model of that, to show a different way, to show that yes, the way of Jesus, the way of humility is the way of Christ, and the way that we are lifted up, that we have the opportunity to model that. And so going back to the beginning, think about this, pray about it, but what inventory, what examination needs to happen in here? What inventory do you need to take today? But secondly, what is God's invitation to you today through these words, through God's words? So what I want us to do is just to take a moment before we come to the table to just do that. What inventory and what invitation is here for me? Maybe you just close your eyes for just a few seconds here to examine your own heart, your own dealings, maybe something you're facing right now, to trusting, to examine what are the desires and the jealousy, the covetousness that might be getting in the way. What are the ways that maybe the world around me, the friends around me, the people around me are pointing me to put me first, do my thing, run over that person, whatever it might be. Maybe it's a call to take a different direction. What is God saying to you right now in your heart? What step is he calling you to take?